Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I am very excited about our conversation today. We have two incredible professionals and entrepreneurs in the studio with us. I'd like to introduce you to Dioli Alexander, CEO and founder of Black Shield Sentinel. Welcome, Dioli.
Thank you, Karen.
Did I say your last name correct?
Yeah, you did.
We checked out the first name, but I didn't even bother. My son's middle name is Alexander, but E-R.
Yeah,
instead of R-E. Yes, I figured as much. So welcome. And you've brought someone important to you to round out the conversation today. We also have with us Todd Davis, creative with Ideology Consulting Group. Welcome, Todd.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you for having me here.
I'm excited about our conversation. We're going to talk all things, I think, internet, cybersecurity, and social media. What else is happening on the internet besides those two things? I don't know. Actually,
Everything.
A lot of things. But it's a fun conversation for us today, and I think an important one. So let's have you both start off by just explaining, you know, who you are briefly, and equally important, a little bit about each of your company. Would you like to start for us?
Sure. So you know, a little bit about my background. I'm an immigrant. I was born in Haiti. Immigrated here when I was 5 years old, and so I'm about as, I think, close as you can get to the whole American dream aspect of, I went to school. I didn't really enjoy school so very much. I got into computers because I didn't have a whole lot of friends in middle school and elementary school. And at first, computers got me into graphic design, which got me into a little bit of coding. And somewhere along the line, I ended up on the dark web. And so I found hacking. And what best place to test out my skills than on my school networks? And so,
of course.
Yeah, that's why not. So that's kind of how it all started, really. You know, by the time I was 9 years old, I was coding in C++ better than I could speak English, which, again, further alienated me from a lot of my friends.
At nine.
Yeah, try to flirt with someone in code. It's great. gets them every time.
Try to flirt with someone in code at nine.
At nine. There you go. So, you know, I did not have a whole lot of friends, and I wasn't too great with teachers either, because I was hacking into district networks, and so I knew everything. So I could turn on and off pretty much whatever I wanted, and I knew budgets, I knew every teacher, I knew every salary.
Ugh.
So, for example, I would always lose pencils a lot, and I would ask a teacher, hey, can I get another pencil? She'd say, well, this is your third one this class, so no. So, well, according to your budget of $75,000 this year,
you ought to have a few more pencils.
You should have a couple pencils left over. So I never had a great relationship with the schools.
Yeah, and side note, I don't know if we talked this much or if you looked at my LinkedIn bio, which is how we connected, but I'm a former teacher and former
yes.
former assistant principal. So I'm going to be swatting you with my ruler across the table.
I was the kid that you didn't really know what to do with, because I didn't, you know, I never got to fights, or, you know, I didn't have a weapon or anything
smart.
Crazy like that. Right. What do you do with that? Right. What do you do when the kid comes and says, hey, I hacked the school network, you should fix this?
So a quick story about that, if I could, and then I would love for you to continue to tell us about your business. When I told my son that we had connected, my 11-year-old, and was excited, I can't remember, I think we went camping this weekend, and that's when I had shared with him. But I had said I was going to have somebody on who is into cybersecurity, but started off as a hacker. And he had a fun kind of way of saying it, like from bad guy to good guy is how he termed it.
Yeah.
could you speak, before you tell us a little bit more about your company and what you're doing and how you're helping businesses now, speak to the dark web? Because the word hacker for me, like my 11-year-old, really does mean bad guy. Does it always mean that?
So actually, by definition, no, not at all. In fact, by definition, the word hacker is the good guys. It's a really interesting thing that occurred. So, you know, hackers are, by definition, actually the good guys. They're the guys that you want on your side. They're the guys who push technology forward by constantly testing
figuring
systems and,
out.
Yes, figuring out, you know, how things could be working better. By definition, the word cracker is the bad hackers. They're the ones who are stealing identity.
I've never heard that term before.
Most people haven't. And so I think it's really interesting.
They're talking about a white guy.
Yes, exactly. Which I think might be the reason why that term is not used very often, because when the terms kind of came out, it was the 1970s, 80s. Yeah. So when computers were just, you know, really starting to become a thing, I believe it originated around Harvard, MIT area. Okay. So they were obviously one of the first schools to get the big full room computers and stuff like that. So that's really where the term originated from. And I think over time, you know, hacker probably sounded cooler, and it was just easier to remember and not confused with the other definition of, mm-hmm. of possibly the word cracker. And so hacker kind of stuck. Yep. And then of course, when the crime started to happen,
we all, the general lay people have just,
right.
That's become our term for it.
Right. Exactly. So, and it's funny because now to separate the word hacker, we now have white hat hackers, black hat hackers, and gray hat hackers. And
gray is that's the hacker that kind of plays in the zone of not so bad but not so good either.
Yes, yeah. So the white hat hacker would be your guy who you know went to school, got the education, got into the industry, started working. Your black hat is your obvious criminal. You know, stays on the dark side per se. Your gray hat is the guy who hacks companies, for example, to help them get better. They don't do damage. They say, hey, I was able to get in this way. You should fix this. So by definition, I guess I was more gray hat maybe in elementary school because I never made any money off of the hacks that I did.
Gosh, had you been influenced negatively by some of the experiences that you had in education and hacking into their system, you could have definitely gone in a very different direction.
I could have, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, it was more curiosity. You know, I never really cared about the money aspect of things. And even in my company now, as we, you know, go and talk about my company, I still don't care so much about the money.
So let's talk about that. Tell us about your company.
Yeah, so you know, Black Shield is a company, you know, that was formed really on the basis to address what is actually happening in the cyber field. And you know, obviously, cyber is becoming a very hot subject nowadays. It seems like everyone is getting hacked, from government to big corporate and small to medium businesses. Not only are just getting hacked, but they're just getting destroyed. Because the reality of it is that a big company, they get hacked, they lose a couple $100,000 or a couple $1 million, they can keep rolling. You know, a Target, a Sears, a Walmart, even something like the U.S. government, they're not going to go down. Whereas a small to medium business gets hacked, between legal fees and possible HIPAA or PCI compliance, you eventually go down the drain. The problem is that oftentimes it when it's registered that someone has gone out of business, it registers as they went out of business because they lost revenue, or they went out of business because there simply wasn't any more business to do, or oftentimes, again, it looks like as if they lost money. But if you actually trace it back, it started getting hacked, and then they lost money on that.
Right.
And then it started with downtime, and then getting sued, and then having to pay fees, and then losing reputation, and you know, down and down and down until, well, they say we're out of business because we have no more clients, or we've just lost too much money, or we can't make a profit. So Black Shield really was formed to address that problem, because for me, while the number of cybersecurity companies, or companies that have the term "we are a cyber company" in them, has more than doubled in the past couple of years, the instances of hacks has increased more than tenfold. So that's kind of like if for every police that Tempe hired, crime increased by 1,000%.
Wow.
That's not a very good
example.
Yeah,
but,
you know,
but yeah, it's not great odds.
Yeah, it's not a very good odds. And it's almost as if the more cops we get, the more crime that happens, which obviously is the opposite direction. And so coming from a background of being a hacker, I think because of the fact that I did it on the dark side per se first, I understand the mindset. And that's really what Black Shield is. Black Shield is more of a mindset company that happens to have offerings and services to offer to businesses. And so, you know, really we focus not just on, you know, the antivirus and firewall mindset, as I like to call it, but instead we focus on how does your business actually operate? And is the way your business operating the most secure way that it can be done, which also ties into things like efficiency and actual technological development, which again, a lot of companies will say, well, we got the newest firewall, the newest antivirus, you know, machine learning and AI is another couple of terms that have been thrown in there to describe the battle against hackers. But the reality of it is that people talk about hackers like they're inanimate objects. It's almost as if people think computers hack themselves. You know, like no one talks about the person. Right. If someone robs a bank, we talk about the person. Why'd they rob the bank?
Right.
They robbed it because they had no money. They robbed it because whatever the case may be. If someone gets hacked, we talk about, quote unquote, the hacker and not much more in detail about the person and the motives behind it. Yep. We just say, my computer was hacked. Well, by what? Or by who? Or why? You know, so yeah. So we again really focus on the fact that hackers are people, they're criminals, and so you treat them as such. And by doing that, you're able to now look at the fact that you're dealing with a criminal. They just happen to use computers as their mode of crime.
Fascinating. So this movie has come up in my mind a couple of times. Have you seen the Sylvester Stallone movie Breakout?
I think I've seen part of it.
I might have the wrong name, but he has been hired by the correction system worldwide to be put into jail, unbeknownst to the everybody who runs the jail. And his role is to find a way to break out.
I have seen that movie. I love it.
Yeah. Right. And what I think what's important about when it's come up a couple of times is you're describing your experience as a hacker, but also your business and what you do for businesses and government agencies. And we'll talk about that in a bit. I'm fascinated because when he would sit down after the fact, after getting broken out of a couple different jails before the big crazy one on the ocean, and I should not give it away if you haven't seen it yet, but it's a conversation with the administration, the people in charge of those jails, about the mentality that he had,
right,
and the lack of communication amongst their staff, right? So it was really all about the people and how to fix those holes more than anything else, the same behaviors that they have. And that, it's a fantastic movie, which has nothing to do with hacking, but I can't help but think.
It has more than you think.
Yeah,
it's actually not unsimilar, yeah?
Yeah, it's not unsimilar at all. In fact, you know, that really brings up something important that we call, Black Shield uses this to do everything that we do. It's called the Castle Doctrine. And the vast majority of cyber professionals that I've spoken with do not know what that is. And I find it very surprising. So a little more about myself. I'm a big history buff. Yeah. I love history. Yeah. My favorite era, absolutely, this sounds nerdy as crap, but my favorite era is pre-medieval in Europe during the times of, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, right? Yeah. And one of the little known things about castles at the time is that castle architects and designers realized very quickly that given enough time, an enemy would get through your walls. It didn't matter how thick you built them. The castle doesn't move.
They will find a way.
Right. And even if they can't break through the wall, then it really becomes a war of attrition because they can bring supplies from the outside and they can keep you from getting supplies in. I find this very interesting because what they ended up doing was they realized that what was important was not building thicker walls, but what was important was building a castle that in itself was harder to get once you broke in. So it made it easier to fight the attacker back out than it did to actually keep them out. So as an attacker, your worst place was not outside the wall. Your worst place was actually inside the wall. And one of my favorite little features is that if you go to a lot of castles that are still standing in places like Ireland and different countries in Europe, you'll notice that a lot of the stairwells are built going up to the right. They all wind up to the right. They all have a wall to the right. And generally, it's open to the left. And the reason for that is because once the attacker broke through the wall, the defending soldiers would go up and then they would fight down. They would allow the attacker to come up the stairs. Mm. Now, here's the thing. If you're holding, and if you can visualize this a bit, if you're holding the sword in your right hand and you're trying to swing at an attacker above you, the wall is right there. And they're around the corner of that wall, of that spiral staircase, while the defender on the top has a clear and clean cut all the way down. And not only that, but has gravity on his side also. And so literally can simply drop a sword. And so that in itself, again, it's not because they all happen to be right-handed, but it's because it made it easier to defend when they actually got in than it was when they actually were outside. And so to really tie this back into cybersecurity, the point is the whole antivirus and firewall mindset that I talk about, a lot of it has to do with that same concept. A lot of companies are trying to build thicker walls. Let's put another firewall. Let's put more antivirus. Let's get a smarter antivirus. Let's get a smarter firewall. To me as a hacker, I don't care because I look at it and I say, okay, you made the wall a little thicker and a little higher.
Ooh.
Great. That's nice. But I have something that you don't, and that's time. Your business doesn't move. I do. And you have to keep me out every single time. I only have to get in once.
Huh.
So once you start looking at it that way, we realize, again, this is why when we work with businesses, company owners tell me all the time, oh, we got the newest firewall, the newest antivirus, blah, blah. And I go, great. What happens after? I love this question. What happens after? Almost every time we get silence.
Yeah.
You know, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, what happens after I get in? Well, you know, we have all the new stuff. Okay, great. What happens after I get in? And they don't know. And the vast, and you know, business owners listening, ask yourself this, what happens after I get in? Because after I get in, I'm home free. So when we work with companies, we work on trying to figure out what does happen after you get in.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know, yes, there's great firewalls out there. There's great antivirus. There's all this stuff. We don't even focus on trying to build that stuff anymore because for us, it's a waste of money. We let other people do it and waste their money. We focus on what happens after. And so when a hacker does get into your system, how can you contain? How can you maintain? And then how can you drive out while still continuing the general operations
That's
of your business?
That's the important question right there. How do you do all that and maintain and continue business as usual?
Right, exactly. Because again, as a hacker, I don't necessarily even have to take stuff and walk away. I can just make sure that your business can't function.
Right.
And that in itself is, if not worse, than actually taking your files and leaving.
Yeah. Fascinating. How do the two of you... Hi, Todd.
Hello.
Well,
hello.
Welcome to the show. How did the two of you know each other?
So it's funny. When I moved here to Phoenix from San Antonio, Texas, because I was actually working for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice at the time. It's funny that you bring up that movie because I worked for the Department of Criminal Justice in Texas. When I was forming my company originally, I was at a business class here called Hustle Phoenix that was helping me to kind of get the initial aspects of my business together. Todd happened to be one of the mentors slash teachers there. And we met once, and there's a really funny story behind this.
We've got time.
I will let him tell
the story.
You.
Oh, yeah, we'll
I will let
Todd
him tell
have
you
the
because
microphone.
I know he wants to tell it because he makes it sound so much worse than what it was. But I had designed business cards, of course, and they may not have been the best business cards, and I had given him one. And because of the design of the card, he could not get in contact with me. I think it's because he couldn't see.
No.
We're not going to go further than
no,
that.
No, it's not that. No, clearly not.
And but because of that, you know, I lost an opportunity. So we ended up reconnecting, I think, like 3 or 6 months later when I was going through the course again to refine my business. And he told me what he was doing. I told him what I was doing. And we, I think, have pretty much been stuck ever since.
Love it. So give us the story, Todd. How did that really happen with the business cards?
So what actually really happened was I've always been very adamant about how you present yourself. And so because he has a very unique name, you know, it's not a normal spelling. So he was very adamant that his business card had to be black and then his font had to be black over top of the black. So essentially, if you look at the original business card he had, you couldn't read his name. Like you'd have to.
Especially if you have old eyes like me.
And so I was explaining to him that I had gotten a resource for him to connect him with and that resource tried to email him, couldn't figure it out. Then I tried to email him, couldn't figure it out. Like it kept coming back. You know, you send an email
sure.
and it comes back. I couldn't figure it out. I gave it to like 3 other people to figure it out of different ages, mind you. And no one could figure it out. The email kept coming back. So I said, you potentially lost out on business because you chose a font that did not go right with your business card per se.
Sure.
And so essentially I was just telling him like, it was just something really simple. Just change the font, change the color,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he had this mindset
that this is how I will do it.
This is how I will do it. It's black shit. It has to be black. And it's okay.
Right.
And I was like, fine.
Yeah,
but
go ahead. But no one will be calling you or emailing you. Have you the question is, have you changed your business?
I have.
Yes.
Yes. So the business cards have been through multiple redesigns.
As they usually
we
are.
Think,
yeah.
We think now we have a pretty good design that
yes.
has not had any trouble reaching out. It's funny because we're actually dealing with a different thing now. So at first, obviously, I was using my personal email, which is just my first name dot last name at Gmail. And then we finally got really official and I got a business email. And the whole process repeated again because I thought, you know, business sucks sometimes. I thought that, you know, my business's email line is blackshield.technology. There's no .com. And for the executive level of things, I figured that I wanted it to be more of a position that you fill more than about the singular person to, sure, again, show, yeah, that as a company, we do this together. It's not just a singular person you're working with. So my email is literally CEO@blackshield.technology. Well, this apparently ended the world because nobody.
Don't know what that meant.
Nobody. And I mean, yes, nobody can figure out. It's just BlackShield.
Where's the .com? Yeah. Where's
it's just BlackShield.technology. Yeah. So people do at BlackShield.com. People do BlackShield.technology.com. Again, I've seen every iteration of it.
I love that we can poke fun at you to make this point. And Todd, would love for you to jump in here.
Yes.
We get so attached as business owners to how we want to do things, yes, and what we think it means. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, it doesn't always translate to our end user and the very people that we want to appeal to. Right. So I love that you joke about it and you're willing to say, you know, and on air, that, you know, these are my growing pains. This is what I'm going through. And I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah. Can we erase that? Can we delete that?
No.
So Todd, I'm sure you find this as you've been a mentor and you work with folks in small to medium sized businesses. This is pretty common. And let's segue, yes, this conversation to social media as well, because there are a lot of folks scratching their heads about social media as it relates to business, and they haven't a clue.
Yeah, and that was the interesting thing. That was one of the reasons why we came together, because I saw that he had a vision for his business, but he didn't necessarily have the conception of what the brand meant to the end user. And I find that to be a common thing with a lot of small businesses, is they have their idea. And that's kind of what the concept of my business is, you know, people have ideas. Okay. There's no problem with that. People are creative, but it's then taking that bridging that creative to actually conversion of consumption. You know, when you talk about like the bigger brands and stuff like that, you know, you talk about your McDonald's or anything like that. They have a brand that has an identity that people recognize, mm-hmm, whether it's their logo or phrases or anything else. I find a lot of small business owners, they have a hard time getting to that part. Like it wasn't that he didn't have a clear vision on what he wanted to do as far as who he wanted to serve. It was, we were just trying to figure out how to get them to consume it. So my part with him is to help him humanize his business to the end user. So it's not necessarily, I've gotten away from this whole thing about it has to be social media per se, as much as it has to be marketing consumption. And marketing consumption to me is how you correlate your message to that person so they can actually read it. So it's like a love language. So I think marketing, yeah, is a real love language to me. And so for small business owners, it's like you fall in love with your business. You want other people to fall in love with your business, but you don't know how to get them.
How do you
kind of
articulate that? Yes. So people, and I love the word consumption. So not only the people are aware that you're there, but, yep, they want to consume it. They want to be participating, yep, with it. Clearly, you know your stuff.
Yep.
And if you are not able to articulate that so it's easy for us to consume,
yep,
and readily available, we're lost on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the field that I happen to be in, being a cybersecurity, just makes it that much more difficult.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other, a lot of competition and a lot of noise.
Right. Well, you know what? There's not so much competition as much as there is noise.
Okay.
Quite frankly, I very strongly believe this. For example, I did a Google search a while ago. I just searched cybersecurity consultants just to see what would pop up. First company that popped up, not going to say their name,
sure,
but it took me right to their cybersecurity consulting page, right? And they're offering their services. I'd never heard of them before. And so I looked up the company's name itself. Well, they are a company that's been around since 1940 or something like that. And they're business management consultants.
Oh, and, this is just an arm of, right, an extension,
right,
of what they
and,
offer.
And so, right. And so I did some of my stuff and I scanned their site and figured out how old their page was. and I, you know, realized their page is only, you know, was only a couple months old at the time. And once I saw the size of their company, I realized what happened. They have the money to get their page on the first page of Google.
Right.
When it comes down to cybersecurity, they see that cyber is becoming a big thing. And so they open a cyber branch.
Yep.
And so they can go back to their clients and say, hey, we now offer cyber. And the clients, you know, let's say if even half of their client base says, okay, we'll try some because we already know, like, and trust you.
They're off to the races.
They're off to the races, and they just go get more clients based off of this. The problem, though, is fundamental. This company was not built on cyber. And so and I'm sure they brought in experts and they brought in people who have a background in the field, but the company's fundamentals, this is not what they do. And so it's, you know, one of the hardest things about articulating about our company here at BlockShield is that we don't do anything else. We started in cybersecurity. We're staying in cybersecurity. We're not an IT management company. We're not a computer repair company. We're not a, you know, we're not even a firewall and antivirus company. We are a cybersecurity company. And so the only aspect of your business that we're concerned about is how does it function on a daily basis so that it never goes out of business as a result of an attack. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Challenging that, though, is, and we go back and forth on this, is how do you explain that to the end user that they should know that they're missing a key part of their business?
And that's before an incident happens.
Like they don't think about, and this is where I try to come from the human side of it, is like they don't understand that they're at risk by doing marketing. They don't understand that they're at risk by having a Facebook page. You know, they're creating more risk without understanding that you're actually not. It's like having a home without insurance. Like, why buy a home and have no homeowner's insurance?
You would never do that.
Yeah, you would never do that. And people are not seeing that. What they're saying is okay, well, if I know someone that has an IT company, or if I know someone that has a computer services company, or a company that's correlating and they have a division, then I'll do business with them because I'm already doing business with them. Versus do business with a company that only focuses on all those particular threats and can educate you and show you how it's impactful to your business. Like any business that has 20 employees or less than 50 employees, you have 50 targets. Mm-hmm. If they start thinking of it that way, and then those 50 targets is what they have access to, how many computers they have access to, how many passwords, username and passwords they have to use, and things of that nature. And then if you outsource to third parties, like third party marketing companies, so on and so forth. So what I try to do is try to explain that to the consumer so they can understand. It's not just like if someone says to me, I want you to do a marketing campaign. I'm smart enough to know from our interaction that if I'm going to do a marketing campaign, it's not just the impact or the return. It's also the risk.
Fascinating.
And so there's layers to it that they don't understand. And it's almost like saying, okay, here's the house. We built it on a semi-okay foundation. We know it's a little shallow underneath, but we're okay for maybe 5 or 10 years. You know, nothing's going to happen. And all of a sudden, you come home and there's a sinkhole.
Right.
The sinkhole exists because you were aware of it. It just didn't bother you enough. And so we get into this thing where we talk about the fear factor. No one has fear of their information. Like if we've seen recently what was going on with Facebook, okay? Has been going on Facebook since the conception.
But we're just aware of it now.
We're just aware of it now. And I so the whole Facebook thing about what he represents is he represents that hidden and missing element for businesses that actually should be working, you know, with me, with a marketer, with
I've never looked at it through that lens before. I mean, I've had plenty of marketing folks come through here, and it's not my zone of genius necessarily, but I've played in social media. I used to own $99 Social with a group of folks. I've done plenty of social media and coached people around that. I've never looked at it through the lens that you are. That's very important. Is there an example that you can give where social media could be a threat to the security of a business?
I could write a book on that probably.
Yeah,
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So you've done social media marketing or dabbled in it in some sense. And for all the business owners out there, let me ask you a question. If your business has done marketing using a third party where you gave them, you know, access to your stuff, they go and post stuff, they go and do their marketing campaign. When they were done, did you get your passwords back?
Sometimes yes, but certainly plenty of times no.
A lot of times they don't even think about it. It's just, okay, we're done doing business. Right. We're done. Marketing companies are a gold mine for hackers.
Right, because they are a door to so many other businesses.
Right. And oftentimes they're even an archive of businesses, because businesses that they did stuff for in the past, I mean, you know, business owners, they don't change their stuff, right? Just because, you know, you take a marketing campaign, you don't change it after it's done. You don't think, hey, they have my password, I should change it. You just continue on your merry way. I have a lot of businesses, and again, when you're doing a marketing campaign, if it works, you know, ideally you do the marketing campaign, it works, you bring in more traffic, you bring in more clientele, which obviously brings in more business. But a marketing campaign involves what's called your digital footprint, is what we call it. And your digital footprint is, imagine a lake and the water is the internet. And when you're doing a marketing campaign, you're throwing a rock in that water and you're making ripples, right? Now, ideally, the people you want to see those ripples are going to see it. But everyone sees the ripples and not everyone is your client. And if one of the people who sees the ripple happens to be someone like me, then I can go back and say, where's this coming from? So oftentimes, for example, you do a marketing campaign, you do a webinar where people are coming in and they're signing up, they're putting in their email. Well, as a hacker, I can go in and if you haven't set up your page correctly, which is very, very common, I can directly send you malware right off the bat. And I know it goes to you.
Oh, it certainly has happened many times.
Oh, yeah. And that's his side. Now, here's my side. Now, I can say without a doubt in my own personal experience, a perfect example. Right now, real time, I still have access to a former client who happens to be one of the largest newspapers in the Valley. And I don't do any work with them anymore. Like, I could literally sign in. I'm not a hacker.
So I won't.
Yes,
and so I don't.
I don't. But I literally can sign in to anything that I set up. So look at it from a macro perspective. Imagine all the former employees, former third-party users that have access or passwords or you have had to get access to, or they had it on their phone, or they had it on their tablet, or they had it on their personal laptop. Now you take that bundle and you give it to someone like him, who the only thing he's just doing is he's just looking for access.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't need, you know, he doesn't care about the walls and everything else that we say we're doing. Okay, we have firewalls, stuff like that. He actually is saying, okay, who has made a mistake? Now imagine how many companies that are so busy that they don't have time to clean up those resources. He gets in once. Now, all of a sudden, he's that person.
Wow.
And that's really where it gets to, because as a hacker, the best time for me to attack you and the best time that we see businesses get successfully attacked is when you're growing.
Of course.
It's not when you're stable. It's actually when you're growing, because when you're growing, you're expanding, right? You're possibly hiring new people. You're definitely bringing on new clientele and everyone's focused on, you know, keeping them happy and making sure that this marketing campaign gets the highest return on the investment that it can. No one is focused on, hey, did anyone change that password? Did anyone check that email that came in? That invoice that came from the CEO telling me to send this over there? Did anyone check that? We don't think about it.
And that's really set up a password manager.
I was just going to ask that. So I use LastPass.
Yes.
And my husband laughs at me because my passwords are a bazillion characters long.
Good.
And I change them frequently because I'm prompted to. If it was left up to me to do it, I probably wouldn't. And I would use, you know, birth date and first kid's name or whatever the thing is. But I love LastPass. Do you recommend services like that?
I do. Yeah. So I recommend using a password manager. Here's the problem, though. If you're using a password manager, the password that is on the password manager needs to be secure.
Right.
Because it kind of ruins the point.
And change frequently.
Right. It kind of ruins the point if I get into your password manager.
Yeah, then everything else is exposed.
Then it doesn't really matter. Right. So it's funny. Actually, and this goes back to, again, we don't care about the antivirus and firewall. We care about the person. I actually put together a curriculum to teach someone how to make a 22-character, it has characters, capitalization, symbols, and numbers up to 22 characters and remember it and be able to change it at least once a month.
You wouldn't be able to do that with me. I have no memory.
I would. And here's the
Good
and here's
luck
why.
With that.
Well, here's why. You already do it. You just don't realize it.
Mm.
Yeah, you do.
You already do it.
From a marketer's perspective, you already do it, because we both know that marketers have good habits and bad habits. And we tend to be very linear in the things that we're passionate about and what we focus on. It's just that we never applied it to a security side, because there was already we consider that an IT thing and not our thing.
Okay.
So we already have it in us. We just have to be disciplined enough and then taught and educated on how to actually do it. So marketers can become better, but those are the ones where they create the easiness of the breach.
Right. And you already, and here's the thing, you know, oftentimes when I talk to people, you know, they start to feel as though it's like, man, I feel so stupid. I don't see any of this, right? You actually are much more security minded than you think. Yep. And this is one of my biggest problems with a lot of, you know, IT and cybersecurity companies is that they make you feel stupid, right? They make you feel as though that these guys are geniuses. They're doing something. Yeah. They make you dependable on them. And it's like, I can't ever touch this stuff. Now, I don't recommend you go play around with your servers. That's one thing. But the reality of it is that you are much more security minded than you think. For example, you know, you told me you have an 11-year-old son. Well, if there's a weird van parked out front, you're probably going to tell them to come inside. Right? You don't leave the house. Even if you live in a nice neighborhood, you generally don't leave your house without locking your door. That's just a reflex, right? You don't get out of your car without locking your door. You don't even think about that. That's just a reflex. You are much more security minded than you think. It just hasn't been pointed towards technology.
I really love and appreciate that because no one wants to go into a business relationship feeling stupid or inferior.
Yeah, right.
and to give people that, like, wow, okay. It's easier than I think it is. I just have to be more mindful.
Yes.
I'm already an excellent example. That really helps.
Security does not mean complexity.
Right. Well, right. And well, I was going to say, everything that you've described when we had a conversation about doing this segment and also on air here today, to me seems complex. However, I don't have to focus on the complexities of it because I have someone like you in my life.
Right.
But you can simplify it so that I understand it and, equally important, have a strategy and a plan on how to avoid leaving myself and my business vulnerable.
Exactly. And the term security does not mean complexity is very important because this is actually, it's another Achilles heel that a lot of companies do. Here's what they do. They say, we have one company who does IT. We have one company who handles our website. We have one company who maybe handles cyber if we have it at all, if they use outsource cybersecurity. We have another company who does our marketing and all of these things, right? All of these companies are having their hands in your technology. I've seen companies that have three IT outsourcers.
Sure.
You know, one of them does their cloud, one does the servers, one does the back. I mean, it's ridiculous. All that does is it creates more points of failure. Because here's the problem. All of those companies, you know, yes, the argument can be made about redundancy, right? That argument can always be made, but it doesn't matter if it's redundant if I can get into it in the first place. That ruins the entire aspect of redundancy. So oftentimes what ends up happening is we find companies that go to the other extreme and they spend a bunch of money on all this stuff and it's no more secure. It's not any more secure because all of these different companies have their hand in your business. They have their own self-interest, obviously, and they're oftentimes, if ever, not talking to each other. So if one of them does one thing, the other one does another thing, the other one does another thing, as a hacker, I just need to find where the discrepancy is, and there will be one.
So to go back to your point about you staying in your lane and just doing cybersecurity, you're not, when you make this statement just now about, you know, a company hiring all these different vendors to do these different things, you're not undoing what you said earlier. You're just saying that you all have to be speaking from the same page and having that conversation to make sure whichever company you're representing is well protected.
Right. And here's what we did at Black Shield to really solve that problem. Because again, yes, it is a counter argument, right? How do we stay in our lane, but still provide the range of IT services that any given company would need? So what we did was we only, and I use this word very lightly, we only partner with very, very few companies. Very, very few. We don't, a lot of companies throw the word partner around because partner simply means you sell my stuff and I try to get more business.
Sure.
We don't do that. Matter of fact, we don't care if you bring us more business. We care if you do it right. And so an IT company, for example, we only partner at this time. There are only two IT companies that we work with. And so, and they have to follow our security, our security levels of requirements. And so by doing that, when we are dealing with a customer, we say, okay, this is what you need on the IT side. This is not our area of expertise. We can obviously make the general recommendations, but we will take it to our experts who are experts in this stuff, get their feedback on it. Then we're going to come back and we're going to do it securely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where it comes in. Oftentimes, the business owner themselves, they simply don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And so, and the only thing that they do know is that they're getting advertised from a lot of noise. And oftentimes it's the company that can say, hey, I can do it all, who ends up getting it because they think, oh, well, it's easy
for me. Yeah.
Right. It's easy for me. And oftentimes they actually, you know, this is a big thing that also bothers me. They play the whole, it's cheaper aspect. When they say, hey, we can do it all, and because we do it all, it's cheaper for you. Well, that may be true up front. But if anyone who has done accounting may know, just because the price is lower up front doesn't mean it's lower in the long run. Mm-hmm. So you may be paying less up front, sure, but what it may be costing you that you don't even see may be much, much higher in the long run. And that's considering if you don't end up getting hacked and then it all goes down the drain anyway.
Mm-hmm. And I consider myself a secure marketer.
Yeah.
So the way that I approach it is being not only his mentor, but being his partner. I try to educate marketers on how to be more secure and not reliant upon other departments or other sources, because it's important, because like you said earlier, we have the ability. We already built strategies. We already developed, you know, modules and everything else. This is just one more module. So for example, using a LastPass and maybe having another person having access to it, right? So it's not only our end to have the secure passwords, but to teach them how to be actually secure as well. And so it doesn't matter the size of the business. This is very key. You don't have to have a supersized business to have a super secure business. You can really be a small business and work the same way. Like, we've worked on this model for a while. You can be the same way as the federal government. It's just discipline. That's all it really is. And once you get educated and you're informed, it's how you resolve to it. I always say to people when I'm talking to them, imagine if you went to surgery, to the hospital for surgery, right? Imagine what it would look like if you're in the hospital for surgery and there's no nurses and there's maybe a doctor. It would make you feel awkward because you're used to everyone working collectively together. Well, this is what we have to do as an online internet community, is we have to work together, understanding how he sees it and how the business sees it from a secure side, so we can be more secure. If it's an extra 5 minutes to create that secure password, if it's an extra 5 minutes to shut off, you know, certain tabs that we have open. I know marketers, we have tons of tabs open. We're doing all this stuff, right? It's just a matter of discipline. So I try to humanize and articulate his message to businesses. So it doesn't matter what size they are. You can be 4 people, 1 person, 10 people. It doesn't matter the size. It just matters that you build this set up to make yourself more secure. And in the long run, it actually saves you money, you know, because then you start saying to yourself, well, do I actually need this firewall, or is this firewall a necessary element? More so than me making sure that I'm secure first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one that has a car is going to allow anybody to have the keys to their car.
Right.
It's just not. So it's right now it's kind of a disconnect, because a lot of people are saying, okay, let me choose this because they provide these other things. That's fine. But do they have a secure way of looking at it? So
yeah.
So for me as a marketer, I'm starting to look at everything from a secure standpoint. Whether it's my cell phone, whether it's my computer. I used to have tons of computers up running and everything else. Now I'm very specific. I shut things down. It's not just as simple as changing the passwords too, because we can do that.
Right.
Right. It's more about the if you're going to grow as a business, key element, you grow as a business. If you already have a secure way of doing things, are you going to train that person you're going to bring in to do the same thing? Because if not, then you flip the script on yourself and you made yourself unsecure by adding an element or a new variable to the business.
Todd, who is your clientele? Who do you serve? I'm hearing this incredible education piece in here, as well as, I mean, do you also do the marketing? Let's back up. It's kind of late in the conversation, but tell us about Ideology Consulting Group and who do you serve?
Well, I tend to say that I serve anybody with a sound idea. I kind of focus on, let's build your idea from, you know, like, I have a bricks and mortar mentality because my former career was in retail. And so I try to take the concept of the idea, break it down, and then essentially build it back up. So that way it can actually be a soluble business. So I focus more now on teaching and training and providing the elements that actually people need to their business. So it's not just, so for me, even for him, I'm taking his business and showing him that, here's your foundation, but now let's take this idea and we can humanize it for the mass public so they can actually be able to consume it. Because, you know, originally cyber, when you hear cybersecurity, it's like, oh man, that sounds like high end and
I've got to be a much larger company, multi-million dollar company to have it be something I need to pay attention to. No, not the case.
No, but, and that's the thing. So for me, from a consulting standpoint, I really just try to focus on businesses and I try to find the fruit in their idea and just try to grow that fruit. I mean, oftentimes people fail because, well, plan to fail, fail to plan, you know, and that's the thing is I help them learn how to plan better because a lot of people are failing because they haven't planned. They got businesses. There's a lot of, I work with a lot of the first marketers I work with. The first marketing I actually did was restaurant marketing. It was on accident, actually, because one of my friends, he owned a few restaurants, and his it was a barter and trade type of deal. Oh, sure. Well, you can have a tab. And all
help
stuff.
Me figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I realized in restaurant marketing, it was very much similar to setting up a business and business planning and everything else. So I actually went back to my roots in retail and how, you know, we do like set up retail businesses and do the real estate part and everything else. And I realized that there was a methodology that marketing had to have. And through that, my own personal experience was I was always trying to figure out how to develop a concise methodology that could carry beyond me. So it wasn't built upon me actually doing the work because I think that's what's happened with a lot of freelancers. Everything's contingent upon them. No.
To Dioli's point earlier, that people say, you know, you need me.
Yes.
And no. They lock you into that need. No. You're saying that you'd much rather educate, mm-hmm. help them. What's the little biblical kind of story? Teach them to fish.
Yes.
Instead of however that goes. I totally botched that up.
Yeah. I mean, because they can be self-sufficient. Every person, basically to me, every person who has a business is a marketer. They just don't say that to themselves. They say, I'm an entrepreneur. They say, I'm a realtor or whatever the
case
may be.
And we're also salespeople, right?
Yes.
We're in the business of whatever business we're in. We have to have a sale. There has to be a transaction in order for there to be an exchange and obviously have ROI. So we need to not only be a marketer to get the word out, to be able to articulate clearly so that people not only know who we are, but they want to consume it, as you said earlier. And then we also have to have that sales piece in our arsenal. So you help folks take from concept and idea mm-hmm. to building out this real strategic plan that's marketing, but it's also branding and really this help people build their businesses out.
Yeah, because I tell them they have to embrace their weaknesses instead of hiring strengths to kind of suppress their weaknesses. Because if you embrace your weakness, you know what you're good at. You know where you shine at. You know, and you know what challenges you. If you embrace your challenges, then the rest of the journey becomes a lot more easier to be able to handle. And so essentially, I find that a lot of small businesses, the help that they need is not external help, it's internal help.
Yeah. Amen to that. Yes, that's where I've spent the last 10 years as an executive leadership coach, really helping people just get the mindset and the headset going in the right direction so that they can achieve their dream and take this idea to fruition.
Yeah, it's a funny story that I can tell really quick. I actually took him one day to the Scottsdale Fashion Square. And the whole, you would think, okay, it's a cybersecurity business. What's the purpose of going there? And we talked about everything from etiquette to handshakes to even his business scent. What does he want to exude in his business? It's not just what's on the business card. It's what aura that he wants to give in his business. How does he want to look when he's helping someone? And we spent an entire day doing that.
But you've got to be willing to be coachable. And you clearly are.
Yeah, I like to think I am.
Yeah, you clearly are. And listen, we met on LinkedIn, right?
Yes.
So we met on LinkedIn and had a quick little, you know, private message exchange, which by the way, and I'd have to go back and look and see how it all came together. But I am very particular about who I let into any of my social media platforms. And you'll probably tell me that I'm not as particular as I need to be. But anyway, and then we got on the phone shortly after. And the way that you carry yourself, and by the way, for our listeners, you are a young man. You're the same age as my children who are in their early 20s. So
he's younger than that.
Right. I know. I remember having joking about not being able to go have that beer together yet. But next year. Yes. But, so 20, a 20-year-old. And I'm not sure, Todd, how much influence you've had, but it sounds like at least there's some. But you've got to be willing to listen, be coachable. And everything that we do, how we walk, how we talk, how we answer the phone, how we ask questions, speaks volumes about our business and attract, like attracts like. So kudos to you for being so successful already before you're even out of your teens, basically.
Well, not only was he coachable, the key thing for me was I wanted him to see it for himself. Because I think what's happened maybe in the last 10 years is a lot of people are looking for that guru or looking for that expert per se, and then they hand it off to them. Why should you hand off your happiness to me when you should be able to, you know, consume it for yourself? Mm-hmm. So if I teach him something, and LinkedIn is a very key because that was one of the first things that we actually talked about. I wanted him to see it for himself so then he could take it and take it to the level that he wants to take it to. So I in no way try to tell someone, okay, you can only do it this way. This is the blueprint. I tell them this is the standard, but then find a way that it makes sense for you.
For your personality, for what you're representing.
And then you take ownership for it because it's really big. It's really accountability to me is really big in that sense. And so he's taking it. In connecting with you, he's only doing what I gave him a foundation of, but now he's taking ownership over it versus me saying, okay, have you connected with this person? Have you connected with that person?
Yeah, that's not accountability. That's badgering.
Yes. And, right? And that's what I find where bad habits start. So for me, what I try to do is I try to undo those habits
before they even take place.
Yes, exactly.
Hmm. Love it. I know some of the things that we thought we were going to talk about, Todd, when we talked about your business were more social media related. And I would love to, just for the sake of time, because we're starting to get to the top of the hour, I would love to invite you back again to have that conversation because so many of our listeners, again, are not social savvy as it relates to business. I'd like to talk about that, but it would be a weird segue. And I don't think we'd give it ample time. Are you okay with that open invitation to say, come back and let's build a segment around just, you know, the power of social media as it relates to business, what platform should you be on, those sorts of things. So open.
I think you absolutely should. I mean, he knows an amazing amount of stuff.
Clearly.
And I will say this right now. I'm not a sales guy. I don't sell. It's like, if you don't get it, you don't get it. I can't help you. And with my background, you know, obviously less social, you know, it's even the way that I can articulate myself now is something that I learned. It's not, you know, I was
and
never
you're
very social.
Smooth like butter. I would not know that. I love the backstory because really, again, at 20 years old, you've got this elegant quality about you. And that's a weird word to use for a young man, elegant, but you're just like, he's in the zone, isn't he? It's just fabulous.
Well, I think that actually, if anything, I could give that credit to, I think that probably comes from the background of hacking
itself. I hear
itself that. Because,
oh,
you know,
That's not what I was going
to
say.
Well, you know, because I have to become whatever I need to become to get into the system that I'm trying to get into. Right.
That's a whether little scary. It's,
just a little bit. It's and I have to, one of the best skills of any hacker is not that they can crack a code or figure out some algorithm or whatever the case may be. It's that they can understand the mindset and the behavior of whatever it is they're targeting. And so I know that going after a marketing company is a little bit different than going after a bank, than going after a grocery store, than going after a mall, you know, and in the mindset that's going on in there and the actual systems that are going around. And so what Todd really did was give me and show me another mold that I could take form in, you know, and again, it sounds almost weird, but you know, that's really what it's almost became.
We're all doing that anyway.
Right. You know, what it's really became that this is what it takes to be an effective business owner. And this is how I have to think to be an effective business owner. And so I can do that. So I think for me, it's just the more that I can be malleable, really.
Well, it's about consciousness. I really believe in your confidence comes from your consciousness. Because you don't have to consider variables in your conscious. You're very aware of, you know, yourself, your inner being, who you really are. And so all I try to do is just bring that out, you know, bring the energy of what it was already there, you know, essentially. And that's what I saw is like the first time I met him, I'm like, I felt like it was like, I'm the only person in the room that's seeing it. And we're in this room with all these other people. And it, you know, it was a bunch of other mentors and they were saying, okay, we were discussing, you know, who should we spend more time with? So on and so forth. I said, the only person in this room you need to spend time with is him because he has it. It just has to be cultivated.
Imagine just 5 years from now, you're already a huge success with your business and what you're doing and who you're serving. I look forward to keeping my eye on you and seeing where you go because you've got the it factor for sure. And I said it's kind of scary. You know, you've talked about being able to be malleable and being molded so that you know how to approach people with different industries. That's my verbiage for what you just shared. But there's this authentic piece that I think Todd's speaking to that we learn how to articulate better. We learn how to present ourselves better. But inauthenticity shines through that. Yeah. Not everybody can pick it up. I know I certainly can. That's not who you are. You are authentic. You're a giver. You're ready to take the challenge. You're a fighter. I see that. And that makes to me as a business owner makes it very exciting to have an opportunity to work with someone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I enjoy what I do. You know, for me, this is not work. You know, for me, sitting down with a business owner for a couple hours and explaining to them how they can be safer. I mean, I've always said this. If I could live the lifestyle and pay my bills and not make anything else and still do what I do, I would do it. No problem. You know, I enjoy what I do. And you know, the IT field is obviously a very high profit area field. And there's a lot of money that flows around in it. And as I said in the beginning of this conversation, I don't care about the money. You know, it's going to come. I'm 20 years old. I got time, you know. Even though I personally hate that phrase, but you know, it's going to come. And for me, it's what am I doing that is actually, you know, helping those around me and in my community and almost in a form of service, you know? And when you look at it, even at a macro level, you know, I'm not one of those people who thinks that, you know, I can change the world or whatever the case may be, but I definitely think that I can change the mindset of a couple people. And when you look at how much, you know, hacking is happening now and the level at which it can happen and the amount of effect that it can occur at, you're really getting to a point where as a hacker, I can stop an economy if I simply, it's a war of attrition, right? And so I really like this field because I really do feel as though that small to medium businesses, not just in Arizona, but across the United States, need someone who's on their side and who says, you know what? I'm concerned about your protection, regardless of what that means for me. Mm-hmm. And that's really, you know, the sword and shield that I've taken up, which is why the company Black Shield, you know.
Yep. Love it.
The key really is, and I'll just say this and I, you know, we can go from there. I taught him about the difference between influence and impact. And I think that's the key for every business owner. Every person who's considering hacking, because we talk about this a lot, is like, we came from the world of influence. Now it's about, to me, the world of impact. How much impact can you actually make in your everyday life, in your business, in your community, in the people that you interact with? And when you look at it from a macro level, like, he has this key ability that makes him stand out. He has the willingness to want to make an impact first, instead of being influential. Like it stood out to me because he didn't care about, you know, his social media influence. He cared about his impact in communities and impact in businesses.
Yeah. One of the things that I have said when I work with executive leadership clients is I work with folks who are already successful. I'm helping you move to significance. So similar to what you're sharing.
Yep.
And that makes a big difference when you're already passionate about your business. You're already a leader and an influencer, and I'm not using that in a social media term, but someone who is paving the way, a thought leader in what you're doing, to be able to appreciate that you have impact and want to have a greater impact and be more significant, I think will pave the way for great success and longevity down the road. I would love for each of you to come back again. We've already said that. I do need to close out the show, but before we do, I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get a hold of each of you and what that first step might be to see if it's a good fit. So Todd Davis with Ideology Consulting Group. Todd, how can folks get a hold of you and what would be the first step to see if they're a fit for you?
Well, you can search me online. Actually, my acronym is Todd Social. So if you search Todd Social, you'll find me on Facebook. You'll find me on Instagram. You'll find me pretty much everywhere. LinkedIn, I'm Todd Nathaniel Davis. Or you can go to my website, which is www.myideology, spelled idea, because it confuses people a lot. Myideology.com. And you can come into my ecosystem, or you can check out when I have like local workshops going on. I have actually a Small Business Saturday event that's coming up soon, where it's open to small businesses to come out to a workshop. It's a free training. I basically sit down with them. I talk about their branding, their, you know, colorization, all components of marketing.
Very good.
So
good. All right. Well, we know we're going to hear more from you.
Sure.
Yes. And how about you, sir?
So best way to reach me, again, my business email is CEO.
That's a business card,
Black
by the way.
Shield. Right. Yeah, right. Not the business card. CEO at blackshield.technology. Just the company name, blackshield.technology, CEO. So LinkedIn, if you type in my first name, D-I-O-L-Y, I will be the only one that pops up. I don't even need to type my last name.
I believe that.
So yeah, sure. Dioli, it's exactly how it's spelled.
It's a beautiful name.
D-I-O-L-Y, yeah. Thank you. French. I don't like it. D-I-O-L-Y on LinkedIn, I will pop up. Feel free to shoot me a message, please. We are putting together a hackathon with Microsoft Corporation here in the coming months. That's going to be starting here in Scottsdale, and hopefully will be a nationwide event. And then we also have, which is something we can talk about more next time, I own a nonprofit that does cybersecurity education for youth. So the goal of it is to get youth into cybersecurity right outside of high school without needing a college degree.
We are going to have many, many more conversations, yes. The three of us. I see it happening.
Yeah. So again, CEO at blackshield.technology or DLE on LinkedIn. You will find me there. Feel free to shoot me a message or an email and we will be in touch.
Great. Thank you again, both, for being here. It's been fun to get to know you in person and meet Todd for the first time. And again, for our listeners, I'm sure they're deeply appreciative of the opportunity to just begin to think differently about cybersecurity and our marketing and how important that whole, you know, system needs to function and work together, in addition to the third-party vendors that we hired to help us build our businesses. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, a broadcasting live from within Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism, Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.